Control with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi and welcome to Robots episode 129. I am Jana, and today we will be hearing all about the control of insect flyers. But first, as always, here are the news with Christine.
Thanks, Jana. The 6th annual Festival Robotique in Lausanne, Switzerland drew a record number of visitors this past Saturday, making it one of the largest public science events in the country. This year's theme, Outer Space, was a clear winner with the many young people and families attending the event. Highlights of this year's event included presentations by Switzerland's first astronaut, Claude Nicollier, about his experience using robots on space missions. Visitors also enjoyed the many hands-on workshops, including a build-your-own Mars Curiosity rover, competitions and exhibits. Launched in 2008 as a way to get young people excited about science, technology, and innovation by connecting them directly with researchers, teachers, and industrial robotics experts, the nonprofit event drew 17,000 visitors this year. In other news, U.S. company iRobot stock jumped 14% following the release of its Q1 earnings report and projections for 2013. We kicked off 2013 with an outstanding quarter, said Colin Angle, chairman and chief executive of iRobot, in a statement. Domestic home robot revenue grew 44% in Q1, representing 14% year-over-year increase. International home robot revenue was $61.3 million, 66% of total for the quarter. Part of the enthusiasm came from a recently announced $14.4 million order for iRobot's small remote-controlled first-look robots by the U.S. Department of Defense. For more information on the Festival Robotique in Lausanne or iRobot's success, visit us at www.robohub.org.
Kevin Ma, Pakpong Chiraratananon, and Dr. Sawyer Fuller are researchers in the Harvard Microrobotics Laboratory, which is led by Professor Robert Wood. Work in this lab focuses on the design, fabrication, control, and analysis of biologically inspired microrobots. The RoboBee project aims to produce coordinated agile robotic insects that artificially mimic the collective behavior and intelligence of a bee colony. As part of the RoboBee project, PhD student Kevin Ma has been working specifically on the control of microflyers. Kevin and his colleagues have just written a paper about their work, and our reporter Sabine spoke to Kevin, Pakpong and Sawyer to discuss the recent advances in microflyer control.
So, hi Kevin, Pakpong and Sawyer. Great to have you guys on the Robots podcast. Congratulations on your science paper. You guys must be really excited about having it.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Let's start by introducing you guys to our listeners. So maybe, Kevin, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a third-year graduate student with Professor Rob Wood here at Harvard.
Pakpong?
I'm Pakpong. I'm also a third-year graduate student with Rob Wood. Yeah, Kevin. Yep.
And my name is Sawyer Fuller, and I'm a second-year postdoctoral fellow with Rob Wood.
All right, great. So this science paper is about the control of insect-sized flying robots. What does your robot look like?
So our robot is modeled after actual flies and bees. And so the robot itself, it looks very similar to actual flies. It actually looks like a very large housefly. Its wingspan is 3 centimeters, so that's a little larger than the size of a U.S. quarter. And it's got 2 flapping wings, just like real flies, but its body is a little more boxy and mechanical looking.
I also really do think it looks like a little house fly. Why make small flying robots in the first place?
Well, we're interested in exploring research questions related to how do insects fly. And we're also interested in questions related to how do you make very, very tiny mechanical devices. And the making a robotic fly is just, it stands as like a tangible goal to try to reach as we explore these research questions. So it's a sort of a motivation for us to explore very interesting, very challenging scientific questions.
And your lab has already explored a number of these scientific questions. We've seen many small flyers from your lab in the past. What could these flyers do before?
The previous robotic flies, they were able to generate enough lift force to lift themselves off the ground, but they had no way of controlling themselves once they were in the air, so they crashed very quickly and very frequently. And the new robot that we've developed, it does have the ability to control itself in flight, and it can stabilize itself and stay in the air.
What's the reason for going for flapping wing rather than another flying robot design?
Sure. So it comes down to physical scaling laws. What we found out in this robot is that as you make parts smaller, different physics kind of kick in at different scales. And what you might do at a larger scale is use an electric motor to power a robot, and electric motors are ubiquitous in robotics. But the problem is, at this scale, this robot is orders of magnitude smaller than any previously demonstrated sort of stable hovering robot. And what this means is we actually, if we wanted to put an electric motor on there, the electric motor would be very inefficient. You can talk about scaling laws, and it turns out the amount of power dissipation for a small magnetic coil in an electric motor scales as length, 1/length squared. So if you make a motor that's half its length, the amount of electric power it dissipates is increased by a factor of, let's see, did I say a tenth the length? So it would be 1,000 times less efficient. So basically nobody makes an electric motor this small. So we had to turn to electrostatic forces, and we use a piezo actuator to drive the wings. And so this forced us to switch from rotary motion, which are generally what powers larger aircraft, to flapping, a reciprocating flapping motion, which ends up looking remarkably like a biology solution.
Can you tell our listeners what a piezo is?
Piezoelectric materials are materials that, when you apply an electrical voltage to it, the material contracts. So by cyclically applying and then removing electrical voltage on this material, the piezoelectric material will contract and relax and contract and relax, very similar to biological muscle.
Mm-hmm. You started talking about the components of the piezoelectric actuators. Can you tell us a bit more about how these robots are fabricated? I know you guys have a great sort of pop-up mechanism to fabricate these robots.
Okay, so the manufacturing process was actually one of the biggest challenges in the project. It's very difficult to build robots this small. And so we first looked at conventional manufacturing techniques, and things that come to mind are sort of the old-fashioned nuts and bolts method, where you machine metal and you assemble the components with discrete fasteners and nuts and bolts. But that method is just, it's not precise enough for this very small scale that we're working with. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we have fabrication technologies for MEMS, or microelectromechanical systems. And these are the devices that are used to make integrated circuit components and many of the electromechanical sensors in our cell phones. But this manufacturing process is suited for making devices with mechanical features on the order of nanometers to micrometers. And so now it's too small. And so we're working in a size regime between millimeters and centimeters. And there wasn't a manufacturing technology that could adequately address this scale. So we had to come up with our own manufacturing process. And the process could sort of be conceptually summed up. So that the main concept of this manufacturing process that we came up with is that making two-dimensional structures, flat two-dimensional structures, and folding them into three-dimensional structures is easier than making three-dimensional structures directly. And so folding is a huge part of the manufacturing process. And so our robots are actually all manufactured as a 2D structure, a very sophisticated and complicated 2D structure. But then we fold it up into a 3D structure. And many people have made comparisons of the manufacturing process to origami and also children's pop-up books, because folding is a very important aspect of it.
So you have a way to fabricate these robots. You have a way to have them take off, but you didn't really have a way to control them. And that's really the subject of the science paper that you guys just published. Can you tell us why controlling these small flying robots is challenging?
Sure. So first of all, the control is possible because of the new robot design that can produce basically torques about all three body axes. And the control challenges arise from the fact that it's a combination, but one thing is that the dynamics of this robot is like really fast. So you can imagine that it's much faster than bigger aerial vehicles, and also it's unstable, resembling fighter jets as opposed to typical passenger planes that are designed to be stable. And also, due to the size and the way that it's generating force and torque, so at smaller scale, we have more effect from the disturbance, and also the way that we're generating lift force and torque, that we are using flapping wings, and we are exploiting unsteady aerodynamics, which is a subject that hasn't been like tremendously well studied. So there's lots of unknowns and uncertainties in the model.
Okay, so because of the inherent instability of the platform and the fact that it moves very fast, basically what you need to do is control it in a very precise and very fast closed-loop manner, right?
Exactly.
What are the sensors and actuators that you use for the control of the robot?
In the current generation, current revision of the robot, we still do not have onboard sensors or onboard processing unit. So right at the moment, we're using external sensors, namely the motion capture system. So the motion capture system tracks the body orientation and the position of the robot, and we use that for control purposes, and we use an external PC to calculate the control signal and feed that to the robot by a data wire.
And to control the motion, are you flapping the two wings at separate frequencies, or are you turning them?
Right. So we have a choice to change the frequency, but we keep it at a constant frequency at the resonance frequency of the system, and we rather change other parameters like amplitude or the mean stroke position to generate torques. And so doing that, we can generate body torque and correct for the orientation. So we can keep the robot upright in that case.
Okay, so are you controlling for both the XYZ position and pitch roll yaw, or just a subset of these?
Okay. So technically, we controlling the orientation, not the exact orientation. I want the robot to stay upright, so I don't control the exact yaw orientation. But I also in the meantime do not want the robot to be rotating, so I control the yaw rotation rate. So I try to minimize all the rotational rates and I keep the robot orientation upright. And also we need to control the position of the robot so it doesn't drift off from the flight arena or the motion, the volume of the motion capture system. Mm-hmm.
And for someone who never did control, can you explain sort of in layman terms how the control works? The robot compares its position to the position it wanted to be in, and then what does it do?
Suppose the robot notices. So suppose using the motion capture system, the computer learns that the robot is tilted too far to the left. What the controller would do would flap the left wing harder, and this would cause a restoring torque. So if the left wing is harder, then there's more force coming from the left wing, and it would tend to tilt you to the right. And then you can kind of expand that a little bit further and say, okay, now I'm upright, but now I'm 2 centimeters too far to the left. How do I get to where I want to go back to where to the desired set point? In that case, what the robot does is it actually tilts, actually a lot like a helicopter. What helicopters do is they tilt. If you want to go forward, you tilt forward, and then that moves you forward, and then you tilt back to level out again once you've gotten to your position. And so the robot actually does something a lot like a helicopter-based control.
What are the results that are reported in the science paper?
So the science paper reports the control of the novel mechanical system.
Can you describe the video? I love the video. It's really beautiful to watch these flyers hover and go left and right. They really do look like flies, actually, when you watch them. Maybe help our listeners imagine what you guys saw when you saw them do this.
Well, first of all, the robot still has a very, very thin wire attached to it. But this does not in any way constrain its motions. So it's free to fly and crash in any way it wants. So when it first takes off, it does a very quick hop, and then it gets up to the altitude that we want it to, and then it just stays at that same level above the ground for as long as we want it to be. And the wings are moving so fast that you can't even see them moving, and it's just like this shimmering space on either side of the robot. And the robot is just slightly like swaying back and forth, but it's sort of very, very stably, like it's sticking to this position in the middle of the air. And it's just very cool to watch because it looks like it's got a brain of its own and it's like just trying to keep itself as perfectly still as possible in the air.
It looks a lot like a fly.
That's a great description. What did you have this robot do?
So far, we haven't had it do much yet, but we've gotten it to hover in place and sort of stay up in the air and not crash. And we've also gotten it to do laps, sort of, to fly back and forth in a line.
Can you tell us how your robot's flight is different or similar from the flight of a fly?
So the main difference is that the wing motions are slightly simplified from that of an actual fly. So flies, the way they flap their wings, it's a very complicated three-dimensional wing motion. And our robot simplifies that motion down to a sort of two-dimensional motion. So in that sense, it's different. The robot doesn't really have any energy source on board. It doesn't have a brain. It doesn't have a battery. It doesn't have eyes or sensors. So it's still lacking a lot of the body parts that a fly has.
Do you feel like there are any lessons that you can still learn and maybe give to biologists?
Actually, fly. So we really modeled this robot after flies. And flies are actually some of the most agile flyers on the planet, and so and they can actually do a few things that our robot can't do. And so on one level, we're looking closely at what flies do as inspiration for what things we could possibly do in the future with our robot. But it actually works the other direction. We actually used our robot to test a hypothesis about the flight controllers of flies, actually. So one of the most interesting aspects of flies is that they have repurposed their rear pair of wings to act as tiny gyroscopes. And it's thought that these gyroscopes give the fly a lot of its superlative maneuvering ability because they act as rotation sensors. What we did with our robot was we actually tested and were able to give support for one hypothesis for how flies use these gyroscopes to keep themselves upright.
Can you tell us about your next steps?
Our next steps are to make the system a fully wireless and autonomous flying robot. And that's going to take a lot more effort in the miniaturization of electronics and batteries and sensors. And so those research projects are also underway, and they're gradually developing lightweight, low power, and very small components that would hopefully be able to fit on the mechanical system that we've developed.
And this is also part of the RoboBeast project. How does this fit into the bigger picture?
Yeah, so the RoboBeast project is looking to build a swarm of insect-scale flying robots. And this will require not only the mechanical system, but also, again, the electrical system and the sensing and the energy source. But it'll also require a lot of computer science and a lot of algorithms for artificial intelligence. So the RoboBeast project sort of it covers all of these different fields in an attempt to make a swarm of robotic bees. And the way this project fits in is we are providing the mechanical the mechanical robot on which all of the other components will be sitting on. But every piece of it is a huge research project of its own. And then put together, we create one very, very capable system.
All right, and one final question. I think a lot of people watching the video will wonder about the application. So we talked about the RoboBeast project. Do you have any other applications in mind, or is this really for the beauty of the research?
So the main motivation, the main application is the beauty of the research. But we can certainly see these highly maneuverable and very small robots being used for search and rescue operations to look for human survivors under collapsed buildings and other very hazardous environments. They can be used for environmental monitoring to send out into the atmosphere to search for trace chemicals or other factors. And they can be used to assist in the pollination of crops to perform the same function that the now struggling honeybee colonies around the world are doing for agriculture around the world.
All right, Pakpong, Kevin, Sawyer, thank you so much for being here with us on Robots, and congratulations on the excellent work.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And that's all for today. Additional information about this project and the paper due to be published can be found on our website at robotspodcast.com, where you can also find a wealth of other robot-relevant information and all our past episodes. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye! Control with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.